Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden, and I want to welcome you to episode 349 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. They have video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp.com. Listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Alonzo. That's BetterHelp.com/Alonzo. Check out BetterHelp.com. So, my guest today is a man who can neither focus nor hold a job. He has written for everyone from Snoop and Martha Stewart to Nikki Glaser, to doing roasts of Bob Saget, William Shatner. This man has written jokes for Flavor Flav. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris McGuire. What's up, Chris?
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me here. Yes, I've definitely the last couple of years being in the audience business, as you know, it's been really hard to hold the job.
It has. So let's get right into it, because you write for comics. Mm-hmm. And I did a little. I wrote a few jokes more for hosts and stuff like that. But how do you do it when someone comes to you and they want a writer? George Lopez, mm-hmm. like, hey, I'm doing so and so. Do you watch him and try to write those jokes, or do you write your jokes and give them to him, see what he likes? And also, what's it like writing for a comic versus writing for a celebrity?
Okay. Well, what I do, I started this a while back, and particularly when I'm running a room, I always do this, but I do it for myself always, is...
Okay, hold on, because we... explain to the audience what you mean when you're running.
Running a room. Sorry. When I'm like the head writer, or if I'm the showrunner or something like that, there's a group of writers, and they usually meet in the writer's room. And so they'll call it running the room if you're in charge of the room. And it's, you know, a lot of times it's, you're like a zookeeper. It's pretty crazy. And, you know, most of the writers I work with have done stand-up comedy, and I think it's very important, like, when you're writing for somebody, to know what it feels like to not do well. You know what I mean? So you really want them – you're not just like, eh, whatever. You're like – the worst thing is that you write a joke that you like or is funny to writers, and you give it to your host, and then they do it. They're like trusting you, and then – it dies. Nothing. It's the worst thing ever. Now, if you're lucky, they own it, and then they're like, off stage, they'll be like, never do that again. But like, you know, sometimes it'll, you know, it's the Johnny Carson blame the writer thing. It's like, my writers, you know, that stuff. So what I do is, because I feel like every great comedian has a certain number of moves, you know, when they're performing. And what I mean is they're short, their comfort zone, technically what they do, you know, things like that. And some of them you write to and some of them you don't. Like, I noticed when I worked with George Lopez, I remember asking him one time, like, give me your favorite comic that I would be surprised that's like one of your favorite comics. And he was like, Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
And immediately I was like, oh, that explains why you do this. You watch George, he'll adjust his tie and like cock his head. But I had never ever put that together before.
That's funny, because as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, George does do that. I never thought of that, but yeah, he
does. Isn't
it
funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know that. And so for somebody like George or Nikki Glaser or Jeff Ross or whatever, you know, it's all point of view. I love working with comics because you're buying a point of view when you're working with a comic. They have like a way they see the world. And so it's going to seem more genuine. They're going to be more invested in everything. And they give you better feedback and stuff like that. So,
okay. Let me shift gears
now.
Sure. Because you wrote and maybe still write for the Comedy Central roast.
Sure.
Which famously bring in people who are not comics.
Correct.
But have to be funny or something on that roast. So famously on the Bob Saget roast, and I was there. I was in the audience. Yep. Cloris Leachman killed it.
Yes.
Killed it.
Yes.
Destroyed professional comics like they were nothing. Talk about that and how funny she was.
It was an that was an amazing set. And, you know, her opening line is I'm not here to roast Bob Saget. I'm here to fuck John Stamos. That was her opening line. And it crushed because no one, first of all, there's an expectation from the audience about everybody that gets up there. If Jeff Ross goes up there, it's like, they're like, oh, Jeff Ross is going to be funny. But if it's somebody like Cloris Leachman, they're like, what the hell is Cloris Leachman doing here? It's always like, what is Gary Busey doing here? What is Martha Stewart doing here? You know, all these people. And so the bar is very low. So if you can, like, nail something with them, it's going to be explosive. So with Cloris, we leaned into, like, that she was just better than everybody else there. Yeah. I have Emmys. You know, I've been in film, all this other stuff. And so the whole point of view of her act was, who the fuck are you people?
Yeah.
You know, who are you? You know? And that was what the through line of her whole set. And that also, there was a crazy joke in there about, like, I was doing donkey shows in Tijuana while you were in diapers, like stuff like that. And so we wrote this crazy set, and very, very funny writer named Mike Ferrucci probably wrote the best jokes in that. I don't know which one, but he's always, like, he's the best roast writer. And he... And so we put the set together, and the showrunner, Joel Gallen, you know, he always does, you know, he always gives feedback before it goes to talent, and then it goes to talent. And this one, he might have been a little nervous about. He thought it was funny, but it was really pushing it. And it's like, let's have, you know, it was almost like he was like, she does have Emmys. What are you doing,
right,
you know, with this?
Well, it also went against, like, Saget's act when people would see him live versus, you know, Full House. This wasn't a Cloris Leachman any of us had seen
or heard.
It was
filthy, yeah. It was dirty. I mean, it wasn't filthy. It was dirty. But so the funny part was, the first phone call that I heard about her was that all of a sudden, you know, when we're out writing and – the showrunner goes, get the writers in here. Cloris Leachman wants to talk to the writers. She's furious. And so, like, we, you know, I come in, and then there's another guy, and then there's some people outside smoking or whatever. And then he's like, no, everybody's got to be in there. She wants everybody to be in the room. She's really mad. And then so we get everybody in there. She goes, this is ridiculous. I have Emmys. I can't believe you think I would perform this filth. That's why I wanted all the writers in the room. And are they all there? And it's like, yes, they're all there. They're all there, Cloris. And she goes, it's fantastic. Four more jokes, click. And then she just hung up. So it was just like her playing, you know, busting the showrunner's balls and stuff like that. And then she did it. I don't think she said no to anything. I think she might have said upgrade this, upgrade that, but it was nothing much. And she basically did what we did, you know.
Now, what happens when you get someone who's not a comic and they're not funny?
Okay, that's hard. what you try to do is do something that's – well, the most famous one from the roasts – I didn't work on this one, but I saw it – was the situation on the Donald Trump roast.
Oh, that was painful.
They hated him. Yeah. The audience hated him. And I think
– he, in his defense, he's easy to hate.
I mean, I think he really had a lot to fight. He had a lot to win over on that crowd.
Right.
And – I don't even remember when it went bad, but it went hard. And he just didn't have the coping – most regular people don't have coping skills for when the crowd hates you. You know, that's hard for, you know, most comics till you get to a certain level. So I think that one was pretty tough because the crowd just hated him before he got on there. Like Tyson, I think is – it has Mike Tyson has a weird charm about him, I think. And he had this big smile on his face. He was really happy to be here, and the audience really liked him. And he didn't quite nail all the jokes, but he went with it. We had him doing like poetry. He was like, I would like to talk, you know, now some about some poetry I wrote in my secret garden. And then he, you know, so we went the other way with that, where we were playing against his type.
Well, two things. One, he does have a charm about him, and I think he has a sense of humor about being Mike Tyson.
Yes.
The other thing is, he is Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Don't get him angry.
Yes.
Right? Like,
well, there's that too. When he came in, in the roast, there's always the day where the host comes in. The person who's getting roasted, sorry, not the host. And then you have to read their rebuttal, which is the thing at the end. And I remember when Charlie Sheen came in, it was, you know, this was just, he was coming off of the, this was him doing rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was him coming off of the, what was it? The Jesus juice? No, not Jesus juice. That was Michael Jackson. Oh, Tiger. Yeah. Tiger Blood and all that other stuff. The porn house, the porn family. And I remember when they said, oh, Charlie's coming in today. I was like, I felt like I was at the zoo. Like I was in a kid and I'm like, oh, I'm going to see a zebra today. You know what I mean? Like that's what it felt like. And he was amazing. He came in. He was kind of like low key, and then they're like, "Here's your rebuttal." And he, we're like, "Would you like us to read it for you?" He goes, "No, I'll read it." And so, just on the monitor, the writer's assistant is scrolling up, and he read it. And I think he nailed everything but two jokes on a cold read. I've never seen anything like it.
So, okay, let's
go back. Sorry.
No, I want to leave the roasts because I mean, your career, obviously there's a ton we could talk about going back to your early days in stand up, then as a writer and now head writer, showrunner, running the room. Mm-hmm. But there are certain, I want to know the reaction when they say, "Hey man, Snoop and Martha Stewart are doing a show. We need you to write."
Yeah. I got a call from
What do you say when you get that call?
Well, I got Sally Ann Salzano, who's the woman that created the Jersey Shore series, and she's kind of the queen of the house show. She does Four Bama Shore and all this stuff. And she called my agent to have me come do a meeting, and I did. And she said, "I'm doing a cooking show with Snoop and Martha," and I'm like, "Okay." And then, but we want it to be like a late night thing, and you're like a late night guy. And I had, was this after? Yeah, this was after the Bieber roast. So I had worked with Snoop several times over the years just on late night bits. And Martha, we did the Bieber roast. And so I'm like, yeah, that can work. That's an odd couple. That's like interesting. And my first question was, can Snoop cook? And, you know, and they're like, yeah, no, he's really into it, blah, 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 and obviously Martha. And I checked off a lot of boxes on that one because I do a lot of travel and I do a lot of entertaining and cooking and stuff like that. So I kind of was like, I'm pretty sure I could speak Martha.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if I couldn't, I could probably figure it out watching some YouTube videos and stuff like that, which ended up really being true. And then with Snoop, it's just sort of like, I go back, actually, this was going back to what I was, when you asked me earlier about what do you do when you write for people, is I'll watch what they do. I write down on cards those areas of comfort, those things that they go towards. So Snoop does rap. Snoop is from Long Beach. You know, Snoop talks about the neighborhood. Snoop, you know,
he's been known to smoke weed.
Smokes weed is the big one. So you take those cards, right? And I would with the writers, I put them up on the board, and I'm like, pitch 80% in there, 20% outside of there. So you always want to put a little English on something. That's what you get from the outside. But if you go on if you go to those cards, you're safer and they feel more comfortable.
I just find it funny that when you're hit with Snoop and Martha are going to do a show, and your first question is, "Can Snoop cook?" As if anyone cares. As if anyone watching the show would be like, "Yeah, you know, Snoop had the flame was kind of high on that sauce. I'm not sure he knows what he's doing." I don't think that came up.
It was my first question, but I. Yeah, I had a lot of questions about it, you know, but it was one of those shows where I was like, I could see that working. And they showed me a video of, like, he had gone on her show years before, and they made mashed potatoes. And it was just this charming interaction between the two of them. And he had, like, some Hennessy with him, and he was just pouring Hennessy into the mashed potatoes. And Martha was absolutely unfazed. So these are two people who literally, like, are in their own worlds.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And it was it's really cool. It was cool to watch them be in one world together in their own worlds, you know? The things I always heard about that show were like, well, my favorite one is a friend of mine said, I love the show. It's like it's like watching those videos where cats and dogs get along.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the through thing in these combinations and in these people you're writing for is they have a sense of humor, yeah. Right? And they have a sense of humor about themselves.
Yes.
I mean, Martha, you know, she had come out of jail, and she knows that being Martha Stewart means
yes.
doing everything perfect and
yes.
and this and that. Snoop obviously loves being – there's nothing bad about being Snoop, right?
So no, he's fun.
He's fun.
He's a party.
Have you had to work with anybody? Because, yeah. you know, Hollywood's notorious for people who are so yeah. image conscious, especially now with social media and branding and – you know, I can't do that. Like, I was in Montreal just for laughs, mm-hmm. and they had a host of a gala, and she had come from YouTube, and she had like a catchphrase, and they had to work that in, and the writers were all like,
yeah.
"How do we? It makes no sense,
yeah.
and yet we have to." Have you, again, with social media, with everything now, have you had to deal with that where somebody's so caught up in their image, they're like, no, I'm not going to say that, or I have to say this?
I do think Martha Stewart was on a roast that I did for Cheech and Chong, which, do you know Robert Morton? Do you know Morty?
No.
You don't? He was Letterman's, like, main producer for, mm-hmm. for a longest time. And then we were doing this roast for Cheech and Chong, and he was friends with Martha, and we got Martha for a tape rolling, and the pitch was that she was going to make it, because it was Cheech and Chong, she was going to make a puff pastry, and it would look like a giant joint. It was a very straight ahead thing, but it'd be funny that Martha Stewart did it. And she was a little brand conscious at the time. So she did something. It was okay. It wasn't as fun as we thought it would be. The second time around, when her name came up, I remember saying, if she'll do what we write for her, we'll make her, I promise she'll be the funniest person on the roast, which was a big promise.
Yeah.
But we were very confident. We're like, look, if she'll write about going to prison, if she'll talk about going to prison, that will be amazing. Mm-hmm. That'd be an amazing thing. And she did this amazing job and stuff. So I would say that was an example when somebody was brand conscious. She still was funny. I've been lucky in that not so much. Probably in late night. But I'm trying. I don't have. I really blank those
yeah,
out.
No, I'm not. I'm not looking for dirt. I'm not looking for a gotcha. So let's talk about you, because you did stand up. Do you still do it?
I haven't in the last 2 years. I think I probably did it a couple times in 2019. But I only do it if, like, somebody's like, hey, I'm doing a show. The whole gang's going to be there. Come on down. And then I'll do it. But I really haven't done it. I haven't done it, like, regularly since probably 2007. It's been a really long time.
You miss it?
I do. I used to really, really, really miss it because it's the greatest job. I mean, it is the greatest job.
Oh, yeah,
job.
I know.
It's the greatest job, right? It is the greatest job. You don't...
The freedom.
The freedom is amazing because you don't... It's just you, a microphone. That sounds corny, but it's you, a microphone, and the audience. You don't need to bring anything else with you. You're just like... It is the greatest job. The hours are generally good, and the creativity... Like, you're a prolific writer. I can tell that you dig the process. You know what I mean? And that's... I miss that part of it. I didn't miss that the aughts weren't super fun in LA. I remember the Comedy Store wasn't super fun in the early aughts.
Right. Yeah.
It was
The Comedy Store has made such a comeback, such a turnaround.
Yeah, oh my God.
And I remember late 90s somebody called the comedy store the adult bookstore of comedy. And I was like, that is the most accurate description. It's all blacked out. It was dark.
Yeah.
And you're really not sure what goes on in there or who's going in and out.
Yeah.
You're looking for that curtain to go behind, right? Listen, kids, this is how we used to have to buy videos. You went in the video store and there was a curtain in the back. See, the kids don't even know that.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Going in and going out, you had to worry about who saw you.
Right. No, I remember this joke from the Larry the Cable Guy roast that reminds you, which was, if you want to see Larry's movies, you go to the video store, they're in the room behind the porn, you know? That front room, I think they redid it, but that front bathroom with the black tile on it and stuff was just very... It looked like Harry, like a bad Harry Potter movie, you know.
And now it's the spot.
It's the spot.
It's doing great. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Listen, relationships take a lot of work. A lot of us will drop anything to help someone out that we care about. Well, BetterHelp will go out of their way to treat other people. And you know, I've been there. I think a lot of us have been there dealing with COVID. And things like that. I have talked to therapists. I've had help. You are not the only one. You're not alone. There are all kind of mental health problems going on. So listen, invest in yourself, okay? You hit the gym, right? You do haircut and hair and makeup. We're talking about TV. You do hair and makeup, even though Chris and I are both sitting here bald. Neither one of us do hair. But we do makeup. On TV, all right, you are your greatest asset. Invest time and effort into yourself and do it like you do for other people. You know, it's funny how quick we'll help someone else but not help ourselves. So this is about BetterHelp.com. I've been to therapy. I don't mind admitting it. I'm in recovery. I've worked on myself. Some say I still got a long way to go. They're probably right. BetterHelp.com is online therapy that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and here's a deal for our listeners. You get 10% off the first month at BetterHelp.com/Alonzo. That's BetterHelp.com/Alonzo. So let me ask you this, because we as comics all get this, but you being a pro writer, prolific writer, when people come up to you and say, oh, yeah, man, I could do stand-up.
Yeah.
I'm funny.
Yeah.
This or that. What do you say to them? So this is my theory.
Yeah.
This is my theory. And we're going through it now. There's a celebrity rapper, actor doing comedy.
Sure.
And it's like, listen, everyone has made someone laugh, so they think they could be a comic.
Right.
That's my theory.
Right.
What's yours?
Yeah, I think, well, there's definitely the I make my friends laugh thing, and so it'll translate. But, you know, that room's not your friends. You know what I mean? When you get out there, it's like... You know, I mean, I came up in Boston, and those rooms were notoriously, like, hostile. Mm-hmm. You know, there you had to be funny real fast. You know, I think L.A. was a little – L.A. people, like, they'll give you 10 minutes, right, do you think?
Well, I didn't know Boston really well. I'll tell you my history with it. I started here in L.A.
Yep.
I tell everyone I started in L.A. because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to. Right. So my first challenge was going to New York. And what I love about – I grew up in New York.
Yep.
And what I love about New York is you can't offend New Yorkers. As long as it's funny, they'll go along with it. Like in L.A., you can offend people in L.A. Then I had to go to Boston. And my challenge with Boston was I knew so many great comics from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is going to be tough. But it went great. And, you know, this is back in the days of the Connection and the Chinese restaurant that you had to do before the Connection. I can't remember the name of it.
Did you do the one out west?
Yeah.
The Hookie Lao.
Yeah. So that's always a good warm-up for the club downtown.
Yeah.
Like, oh, by the way, you got to do two shows at the Chinese restaurant. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But Boston is a kick-ass comedy city. People from Boston have a great sense of humor because it's a tough city.
Yep. They like, yeah, it is. They like, I mean, there's a formula to like, I could tell anybody, you know, and it's probably true of other cities too, but I'm like, look, if you make fun of, if you make fun of this town or the people from this place, or you make fun of something like the tolls on the Mass Turnpike or, you know, something, anything but like, you can't make fun of sports. They would kill you. But if you did a couple of local things that kind of like works in the Boston lizard brain, they'll like you pretty fast. I don't know. I think it took me a while to figure it out. They like, you know, whatever, drinking jokes, things like that. You know, you open with some of that, you know, then you can ease into your stuff. It's pretty easy. I made a bet with somebody. I was like, My Fair Lady, that I'm like, you think you could take an open micer and turn him in and help him write a killer 5 minutes in a week? And I was like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's in Boston, it would be easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now, and you know, our time is somewhat limited.
Okay, got you.
Unfortunately, but no, we're not rushing.
Okay,
but I want to get to today because I say this repeatedly. In this time we're living in, okay, when we have a truck convoy, and they really try to find a truck to join, right? We had what I think there were 7 trucks, and you have that, and then you have the ridiculous anger that we have going on about, you name it, whether it be mass vaccines or Karen.
Karen's always upset.
We're living in such an utterly ridiculous time. I always say it's tougher to be a comic because I have to somehow create something funnier than reality.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, how do you write the good Trump joke? Do you know what I mean?
Right,
like, how do you do
you
that?
You have to top what he said. Or I'll give you another name, Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but that's your job, right? I mean, especially when you do late night stuff.
Have I had to write jokes in the? I think we've mostly avoided in the shows I've been on. Mostly avoided writing the Trump jokes, and I'm glad because it's hard to write one that isn't divisive that somebody gets upset about, and it's hard to top. Like, and TV is really not about upsetting people.
Yeah.
You know. For better or for worse, it's not. I think you're right. I think, I mean, as a stand-up, like going out and going on stage, I think I would imagine audiences are probably cooler than that are definitely cooler than social media. Social media is the worst audience in the world.
Yeah, social media is just
there. It's worse than the Oscars.
The gotcha, and everyone's a snowflake. Everyone wants to cancel the ones they don't like. We hate cancel culture, but we'll cancel you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
sure.
Okay, so now this is what I want to do because I got a professional writer. I got a guy who runs a room. So I'm going to run some current news stories by
you. See what you do about it?
You give
I'll help
me
you with angles? Okay.
What you can do with this. All right. Ted Cruz says that whenever he gets on a plane, almost always there's somebody, usually the captain or flight attendant, who hugs him and tells him what a great job he's doing. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, that's got to be a private plane. That's a private jet. There's no way that guy is walking through coach and getting hugged by people. You know, I don't think so. I think he's got a limited sort of I don't think he flies. I don't think he flies the planes that you and I fly.
Well, actually, he does.
Does he really?
Especially when he's escaping.
Oh, yeah, when he's going to Cancun.
And they, you know, it was on Twitter, he obviously, and one of the tweets was this woman said, I've been a flight attendant for 43 years. I guarantee you this has never happened. I think that was the best one.
That's
because
amazing.
Others were making fun of him, and she was like, no, it just impossible.
If they're flying to Cancun, maybe they're hoping he won't come back. And that's what it is.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, this is another one that in that same let's say vain as Trump or Kanye, the constant noise, anything to be in the news cycle, who knows what she really thinks, what she believes, whatever. So her latest complaint is that because of the mask fines, she's working for free. She has to pay so many fines for not wearing a mask.
Right.
That she's working for free. And I don't know.
I still think she's overpaid.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if she what, is she looking for sympathy in that, or is there anger? Like, what do you think?
I mean, first of all, again, let me stop. Yeah,
go ahead.
Interrupt you, all right?
Yeah. You're running the room. Yeah. You got to make this funny, Chris. You got Marjorie Taylor Greene saying she's working
for
free.
She's overpaid is pretty good.
That's
overpaid's
good
a pretty
That's
good
a
one.
That's a good one.
I think she's overpaid is good. I think she's, I don't know what's funny about this, but I guarantee she's not paying those fines. She's accruing late fees on it. She's
no, she said they take them out of the check.
Oh,
she said they take them out of your paycheck. But that's why she's not getting any money.
That just feels to me like a tax that like is the easiest one to avoid paying. Just wear, you know, if your place of business is telling you all you got to do is wear a mask. How much time do they spend in chambers anyway? You know, they're like, yeah, I don't know. That one, she's another one. It's like how much, like my favorite one about her was the, what'd she say? Oh, the Gazpacho police?
Yeah.
That, I mean, you cannot top that.
You're running the room. You got to top it. You got to do something with the Gazpacho police. Nancy Pelosi is mixing up cold soup. And
yeah. That one I do a quick hit and move on. And maybe the overpaid one's pretty good.
All right. And this one, two parts to this one. Leaded gasoline. Okay, which just they finally banned. It's completely gone, right? Mm-hmm.
There were
a few things that still ran. It's completely gone. And now scientists are saying that leaded gasoline dropped the IQ of over 170 million Americans, which is about half the population. That's part one. But part two is it said it dropped the IQ 2.6 points.
Okay. That's like one question on the test, right?
So,
I think you're blaming a whole lot of what's wrong in this country on leaded gas.
That's what it sounds like initially. And then you realize like 2.6 points. Okay. That doesn't explain the Republican Party.
No, it doesn't explain Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, unless Marjorie Taylor Greene is literally like a human version of leaded gas, gas fumes.
Maybe there's 100 people who didn't lose anything, and she lost enough that the average is out to 2.6, right? What would that mean?
What are the people? But I want to know why the other half were fine.
Yeah, it did not say that. It did not say why the other half are fine. It just said that.
That feels like blaming a lot of these problems on leaded gas. I don't know. Let me think. That's like one question on a test, man. You take a test. I took the SAT 3 times. I had bigger swings than that.
Yeah. The only thing is the headline is what gets you, right?
Oh, of
that
course.
Leaded gas has reduced the IQ of Americans.
And then it's paragraph four. It says 2 points.
Right. Yeah. Right. So let me just give you that headline.
Okay.
Let me just give you that headline here. Chris, leaded gas has lowered the IQ of half of America.
Leaded gas has lowered the half Q of half of America. There's a great California joke in there. How do you explain A, B, and C about California? You know what I mean?
Right, because our gas has been clean.
It's been clean forever. You know what I mean? We got the cleanest gas in town, and we got a lot of idiocy in California. You can run through pretty much every diet since 1980.
Then we found out gluten took out the other half.
Gluten. then how come Schwarzenegger?
Right. Isn't it funny how far, and again, this is why it's hard to parody the news, right?
Yeah.
How far we've gone to where now Arnold as governor isn't even funny anymore. Like not like it was. You know what I mean?
He's like a reasonable person.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like we've moved the bar so far that the Terminator is governor. You're like, yeah, why not?
Yeah. You know? Well, it wasn't The Apprentice. He did The Apprentice too, so, but that was afterwards. It really is kind of crazy when you're like how everything has shifted this way, being like the left is leftier and the right is rightier. And Arnold, who was always seemed rightier, is really like, you know, now I'll watch a video with Arnold playing with his like pet donkey or something. And I'm like, oh, look, and that's nice. You know, Arnold's playing with a pet donkey.
So and we're going to wrap up in a minute, but two things, because you mentioned something about TV not meant to be provocative, not meant to push people. Is that network TV or is that all TV?
No, that's network TV. But like, I mean, it's, I mean, this is a big answer to it, which I think is that there's a lot of consolidation in media, obviously. Like we used to have, you know, hundreds of television producers. Now we have four media companies and things like that. They're all firing people. Comedy departments are like, they're not, it's not the same. You know, they're like a lot of the, like Comedy Central, all those Comedy Central folks, they're like, they're gone. They like, bye-bye. You know what I mean? There's like one guy I know from Comedy Central still at Comedy Central. So I think some of it is just a general, and a lot, there's that. And I think that's a product of like things like podcasts, video games, you know, all these things that have your attention. So people are so desperate to grab your attention that, yeah, there's the premium great shit that's like, you know, that blows your mind. That's amazing. But then there's so much stuff that's just like, no, 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 we just did. Please don't piss off a viewer. We only get, I worked on a show where it was like, I mean, I couldn't believe the numbers on this was a couple of years ago on cable. It was like, we got less than 100,000 people watching this thing. And I was like, wow, how are you still in business?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're like, we just don't want to lose like 10,000 of that. Like, well, I mean, literally that was some version of the conversation. And I would, it's they're particularly on the linear side, they're on all the sides, they're desperate for, to grab your content. So it's really about like what your attention. So it's really about like what's premium. Like Netflix isn't, Netflix clearly does not care about pissing people off.
Right.
Clearly doesn't care about it at all.
But
for better
works,
or for worse.
It works, doesn't it? I mean, all the talk about Dave Chappelle's special was incredible free publicity for Dave Chappelle's special.
Oh, of course.
And I've said that I used to say 50%. Now I'm going to say 90% of the people who complained didn't watch it.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it's like for all the most of the things that people are upset about, and so we were talking about Stern earlier. I mean, that's a 3-hour program every day. It's like who's pissed off enough to watch all of that? Like it's just masochism. Do you know what I mean? And like, oh no, they don't even want it to turn around. You know what I mean? They're like
they
watching it.
They want to stay angry.
They want to stay angry. And I think that's a lot of what obviously social media, what was it called, the social dilemma on Netflix, which was an amazing documentary and stuff like that. And the whole social media experience is wired to make your brain, to make you stickier by pissing you off so that you'll stay watching these things and stay engaged on these platforms and stuff like that. So I do think that there's definitely, I mean, in the digital world, there's people are taking chances. People are doing, you know, it's narrow casted. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're like, if you like this, here's your podcast and stuff. But like on late night, they're, you know, there's obviously like, I think like, you know, like Kimmel has no problem leaning into his political views. Neither does Colbert. Neither does Seth Meyers. Mm-hmm. But the other guys are kind of just dancing around it. You know what I mean? Like, just like, hey, you know, it's in the news. So we'll tell a joke about it. But it's not, you know.
Not aimed at anyone.
It's not. It isn't as sharp a focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a kill shot. Do you know what I mean? And those guys are taking kill shots. But like, you know, so I think it really depends on, you know, if you can do that on a broad platform like late night. And you have viewers, that's all they care about. But the viewers may not even be on television. They're watching the clips.
Right, they're watching the clips the next day or viral.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, we got to get out of here. Okay. So I got to ask you for one more thing that I always want to ask my guests. And again, in a time of news and, you know, we talk who's paying attention is a podcast, all kind of things going on. Give us some good news, Chris. What's good right now?
Man, this is a rough one. There's a lot of bad stuff going on. I mean, there's a lot of one good thing. I mean, I think the best good thing is you just look at the the curve in COVID cases is just like, you know, we're definitely coming out of it. Hopefully, you know, there's a lot of optimism. I'd like to be optimistic about it. I think that's probably the best thing to be, the best good thing. It's inspiring to see the stuff, some of the stuff's happening in the Ukraine. It's pretty inspiring stuff. But then I get tempered by, you know, I know we can't do anything, but we should be doing something.
Right. Well, it's, yeah.
It's super complicated.
That's a show unto itself.
Yeah, it
that is.
That
is a show unto itself. And, you know, the funny thing to me about COVID, which I think is great, is all the people who are like, see, we didn't need the vaccine. We didn't need the mask. And it's like, that would be why the numbers went down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the anti-vaxxers and the anti-maskers are now somehow taking credit for, and it's like, yeah, no, you had nothing to do with the solution to this problem.
Yeah, your Aunt Marge is not an expert. Like, I mean, no one, it's like, you know, there's so few people that, you know, again, even with the experts, it's somewhat of a guessing game because we've never been through anything like this. But like most of the news on it is noise from, you know, social media nonsense, you know.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you for having me, man.
It was great to have you here.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in. It's great to hear a little bit of the behind the scenes of how people get funny. And what I love about what you talked about, you talked about the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has been said, and a friend of mine was a finalist on America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that one of the producers said, the reason it's so hard for comics to win is the good ones make it look easy.
Oh, wow.
So thanks.
But that's true also, right?
Absolutely. So that's why I want to thank you for coming here and talking about the work
involved
in making it look easy.
It's not. It's really the comedians that do the hard work, and they're the ones that make it easy. And I don't know if you felt like this, but when I started out, I didn't see a guy bombing and go, I'm better than that guy. I saw a good guy going like, hey, that doesn't look hard.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the hard
work.
They
make it look effortless, and then you start writing, and you're like, oh, I gotta put a little into this. Thank you so much, Chris.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Thank you for listening. This has been another great episode of Who's Paying Attention. Catch me this weekend, March 11th, 12th, and 13th at Tommy T's in Pleasanton. That's in the Bay Area. Listen, if San Jose, San Francisco, Oakland, anywhere, come through Tommy T's. There will not be a podcast next week. I'm not going to be available. And then I'm going to come back with a big episode 350. Thank you.